So Artemis Unchained is happening this Sunday, the 26th. I know there's still room. It's all women's event. If you are a lady or know a lady, it'd be a great first event. Naomi is playing in the event because Andy promised her she could play in just one single round. So there's a purple division, women who are just playing one single round. I know there's room. It's a great event. You can find it on Disc Golf Scene, Artemis Unchained.
Welcome to Hudson Valley Disc Golf Podcast. It's Pat. Got Ryan, Jack, Jason, Jamin, and El Presidente Kenji. Before we get anywhere, Jack, you went to Cedar Beach like a month ago, right?
I did go to Cedar Beach like a month ago. I actually called Nick Gerges during the week before I went to make sure that he was cool with it, because I didn't know what I was going to be perpetrating upon my card mates. My goal was to play 4 to 6 holes. And, you know, walk the rest of the first round, hang out for lunch, and, you know, split before the second round started. And Nick Gerges, thank you very much for running a great event. And he assured me that I was welcome and wanted, and threatened to come get me if I didn't come down. So I appeared. I got a ton of hugs and a ton of support. Saw people I hadn't seen in close to 2 years. I did manage to play all 18 holes.
Nice.
Throwing some of the dorkiest standstills you'll ever see in your life. I had not thrown a driver before I showed up that day. I'd thrown some putts, and I'd managed to, in my backyard, I'd probably get 150 feet away from the target, so I threw some upshots too. But I hadn't thrown a drive until hole one.
What was your disc strategy if you knew you were going to be throwing a lot of standstills?
So Cedar Beach is a little bit of a clusterfuck almost every time out, because it is on the beach and it's almost never not windy. And it was extremely windy. And so your typical bag needs everything, because you could be throwing with, you know, a 25 mile per hour gust at your back, or you could be throwing into one. So it really calls for your most understable gear and your most overstable gear. And I didn't want to think about any of that. I'd have shot 10 strokes better than I did if I never touched a driver. My best shots were all thrown with my wizard and my zone, and I should have used those off the tee. And if I had, I'd have shot 10 strokes better. So Cedar Beach also has a ton of OB.
Do they OB all the poison ivy spots, right?
So obviously, yeah, they OB the rough, but it's also, it happens to be a pitch and putt golf course.
Yeah, I played it before. Only place in my life I ever got poison ivy.
Yeah, well, it's poison ivy the size of the rainforest.
Kenji, have you said you played there but never in a Cedar Beach Classic?
No, I was camping 1 year in Long Island, and that was the only course on the island. And so I took, you know, half a day and checked it out with my wife with our family friends and whatnot. I went and played around by myself.
Nice. The reason I ask is because Nick also enjoys to put a bunch of other OB in there as well. Basically dividing the holes.
Well, this is like before you disc. So I'm working off like a map or something, and you look out and, oh, I see six fucking baskets. That I
can yeah. That's the thing about Cedar
Beach. Which one am I supposed to be throwing at?
There's lots of places where you can stand on a tee and see six baskets. Yeah. And it plays all over itself. And so for tournaments, they use a lot of paint. So in addition to the rough, and in addition to the lines that they put in separating one hole from the next, there's a fair amount of sand traps that are OB that have drop zones associated with them.
So with that much wind, I've got to presume you're just trying to throw probably shorter shots that you can be more accurate with.
And those hedges provide cover, but only up to a certain height. So if you keep it low, you might have a chance too.
There's not
a tree.
I'm having
fun with rollers because, you know, you got to throw rollers on golf fairways.
Oh, that's why you got poison ivy.
Yeah. Because I wasn't playing it as OB. I went and got my shit.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's more about the time I think it would take for a tournament if everybody had to stop.
That's
exactly 3 minutes. It takes 3 minutes to get in there. And, you know.
There were some spots we played this weekend at New York State Champions that you literally had to army crawl to get to your disc.
But Nick will provide those suits. So if you want to, like during lunch or after your round, you can go in and get yours. Maybe you'll find somebody else's, but you can go in and get your disc. So nice. That's awesome.
It rained and there was like a thunderstorm in the morning. So the afternoon was real humid and everything was a little wet. And I went and played the course and I went in there and got, you know, all kinds of wet and I'm sure oils all over. And I didn't shower for like 2 days. Because I'm like, oh, I don't get poison ivy. And I actually a super mild case, but it's the only time in my life I've ever gotten poison
ivy. To look at the brush at Cedar Beach, it looks like
cattails.
And like rhododendron. Some of it looks like rhododendron.
The big, tall dune grass.
Yeah, it looks like a shrub. The first time I was there, Ernie's pointing it out to me. He's like, look out for that poison ivy. I'm like, man, I don't see any poison ivy. And he's like, I don't see any not poison ivy.
yeah, because it doesn't look like – it's like – poison ivy on steroids are huge. Like, yeah, it doesn't look like any poison ivy I've seen, but I don't like I said.
I mean, I've never seen anything like it elsewhere. You know, it's not a plant. It's not some creeping vine. It's shrubbery that makes you break out in a rash.
All right. And do you want to tell your score? I know you hinted at it, but.
So I don't remember it offhand, but I do know that I beat Nick Gerges.
Oh, nice.
That's my first round score. I'm sure he would have gotten his shit together in the second round, handed me my ass. But in the first round, stroke victim one, TD zero.
So what's he got on his mind? You know, he should be focused.
Yep. Well, he actually promised me I was going to beat him when I talked to him on the phone. I was like, all right, we'll see. But I played all 18 holes. I was surprised I was able to do it, but super stoked. I really had to drag my ass through the last four or five. But if you're going to do it, it's the best place to do it. There's no elevation.
Yeah, it's all flat and pretty easy walking.
Yeah, that grass is cut, you know, a half inch high. So there's no drag on your stupid leg, if you have a stupid leg. Yeah, it was a ton of fun. And, you know, Gerges puts on a great event. Jeff Sullivan was helping him out. And the Walshes. And if I keep going naming the people who made that happen, I'm going to forget people, so that's as far as I'm taking it. But Lidge Throw is a fantastic event, and the Cedar Beach Classic is one of my favorite tournaments to play, and it didn't disappoint. It was super fun. I got a lot of support out of it. I was
Lidge just lose one of their courses?
Yeah, the one that Jeff and I designed, Calverton.
Mm. Yeah.
Which was a fun course.
The land was up or something? They didn't want to renew it or something like that?
This was built on half of an old Lynx course. Way out on the end of the island. And the writing was on the wall when we were designing. There's a big solar farm across the street from this thing. The owner's primary business was paintball, so they had leased the land to set up for paintball. They did a number of other sort of extreme races, like mud races. I forget what they call them. Like
soccer ball.
Soccer,
golf.
Yes. Soccer golf. Golf. They call it foot golf, yeah.
I played foot golf. It's fun.
Seems like fun. But yeah, I was always worried about it. It was a fun course, but Long Island's options are unfortunately dwindling. We're going the wrong way there.
Yeah, well, that's for a premium price out there.
Yeah. I heard rumors that Cedar Beach is in trouble too. Not so much in terms of like the disc golf course, but
golf course.
The golf course is there, I think, runs at a loss. And the town is, I think, threatening to put beach cabanas in that space. So I think that one's under threat too. So,
well, just the cost of maintaining a course got to be expensive.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because I mean, they're maintaining greens and, you know, they have all the equipment they need to maintain the greens. They keep people in that building too, you know, in season, taking fees and doing maintenance.
And they're not making a lot of money off season. That seems to be a course that only gets played right around time to prep for Cedar Beach.
Yep. And it's not even open otherwise. It's a fairly short season.
Yeah.
Also, the golf course isn't super nothing to be able to charge a lot for, right?
Right.
They make $10, $20 a round.
And that's the moneymaker.
Yeah.
Yeah, air quotes. But so the disc golf course never needed to perform. It's really the fact that the ball golf course is not performing is what's putting the course in jeopardy.
Well, if they just leave some space, maybe you can still keep a course without the maintenance as much.
Yep, I think that's true. And I only heard one single rumor from one single source, so I don't know. It's the town of Babylon, and I don't know what's in their head. I heard this one thing.
Long Island, they got Hexler now, right? Heckler?
Hexler.
Hexler?
Hexler,
yeah. Hexler, yeah. Which Hexler is a great course. Big boy course. And it's improving all the time. And its designer, Ernie Motten, says there's
Texas, room. Right?
Yeah, that's right. But he was back for the classic, which was fun. It was good to see Ernie. And I think one day we might tempt him back to New York. But he says there's room for another 18 there, in addition to the 27 that they have now. 27? 21.
What's that, 21 or 22?
21, right?
Yeah, I think 21.
Yeah, someone's going to yell at me for not knowing. But long story short, the Cedar Beach Classic was a tremendous success for everyone who went, the people who threw it, and a personal joy for me.
Awesome. We want to talk about brackets next?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we can do that. Well, I will say, Pat, very, very impressive bracket for FPO. Now, did you submit 20 brackets of all different combinations and name them differently? Or was this your one and only bracket?
No, one and only. That's the only way I could think of to get Missy Gannon to the finals.
Oh, and then I see. Okay.
And then I knew she wasn't going to beat Paige. But
I picked Missy as well to go pretty far, although I think I had Haley winning the whole thing. But
I had Haley over Missy.
Yeah, Missy, she's got the mindset and the putt for match play. It really turned into who's hitting their 25-footers, and even, I mean, Missy hit some longer ones.
I was listening to an interview recently with Missy Gannon, and that's her game. She's confident in her putt. She goes for everything inside 50 feet.
Yeah. I mean, even to push the playoff, so I was there for all day Sunday at the Steel Club, and then I was there for one of the rounds on Friday, which was a lot of fun. The FPO final came down to Missy had to hit like a 25-footer to push to go to a sudden death playoff, and she like canned it. And I was like, man, I absolutely would miss that putt. And she hit it, no problem. Yeah. In all of those baskets, too, I don't know if you guys feel this, but if you have a basket that's kind of just out in the open, you know, for me, it's a lot tougher to hit than something that's like in the woods and surrounded by trees. And this one was just like all out in the open.
Approach game is a little more tougher when it's out in the open like that.
It is. Tougher to judge
distance. Get that distance dialed in, you know.
Yep.
I had her reeling off of her list of many nicknames at one point, and one of them that she was particularly proud of was Missy Don't Miss.
Nice. Well, it was crazy because you were one of only like 50 brackets out of 1,200 that got it all right.
Nice.
And half of them were untitled, so I bet you they were just like people putting in tons of them.
Who won the MPO out of us?
Out of us, it was Jason.
Without any Paul? That's a picking machine.
Jason, did you pick Chalk?
There was the two upsets. I mean, I obviously picked Ricky winning, and I had Kevin Jones winning. But other than that, I think I got top players. I had Calvin in my head winning it the whole time, so I just kind of worked with that. And obviously, Eagle is tough to beat, so I just got lucky, really.
Did anybody watch a lot of the coverage at all?
Where was that?
So it was at the Steel Club, which is the country club that's in Hellertown, Pennsylvania. It's right in between Bethlehem and, technically, it's east of Bethlehem, but it's about 20 minutes from me, 20 minutes from Allentown, 20 minutes from Quakertown. So it's kind of right in the middle of the Lehigh Valley. It's a modified layout. They built a 12-hole layout in the same area that the original 18 is placed, and that was on a 9-hole ball golf course. They call it the Hills Course there. And Steve Brinster and Simon and Steve Bro designed the 12-hole just for the match play. And it was very surprising to me because there was tons of OB. Hole one was a par four where the rough was all OB and only the shortcut fairway was in bounds. There were definitely some holes that had some pretty ruthless OB. didn't stop Calvin or Eagle or Hammes from birdieing hole one, though, which was incredible. It was like a 900-foot narrow par four. They all parked it, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, the thing is, I don't think that any of the footages came out yet.
It's the live stuff.
Yeah, unless you saw the live or you caught some of the highlights like Eagle's 700-foot drive.
You can watch the live on Disc Golf Network.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you guys watch any of it?
I kind of like went in and out watching it. Yeah. I kept looking for
it. It's hard.
I was looking for Ryan in there to see if I could see him. But
yeah, I wish I was there Saturday to see Eagle's big drive. I cut the Sunday matches.
Foot park job.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. It did. He does have a little bit of help because the hole kind of slopes left to right. So there was a little bit of an elevation change once it starts to turn. But still, I mean, it was just incredible. He almost got it there the round on Sunday, too. He just kind of didn't commit to the angle enough, and it kind of came out before it made it all the way to the basket. But there were some pretty cool shots, pretty awesome rollers to watch. So it was a good time.
Ryan,
mm-hmm.
Do you know what the purses were like for this?
They paid out both winners $10,000.
Jesus.
Which is actually more than most non-majors.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a huge payday for Paige and for Calvin. It was Calvin's biggest cash take-home.
Yes. How deep did they pay? Or was it just
That's what I was going to ask. Is it one?
Then it went $5,000, $4,000, and then $2,500, $1,500, and then everybody that went got paid.
Like a minimum. Yeah. Got paid something. Yeah.
But, you know, pretty significant. I'd say the purse was pretty legit. I think that they'll make some adjustments to it. I don't know if 12 holes made sense. I think, you know, 18 would have been more appealing, but it depends on how they cover it. Yeah, it depends on how they cover it. I also think it would be cool to add more people to make it a little bit deeper because you'd have probably some more upsets and you get some more of the lesser known guys in there.
More to 64.
Yeah, make it right. Well, right.
You got to think about it.
32. So,
32. Right. 32.
Was
32.
Is there time for more?
I think there is because they only had it. It's all just depends on the media side of it, right? Because I think that they limited the number of cards that were on the course at. Well, there was only ever two cards on the course at once. So. And I think that was just to make sure that every card got captured.
Got full coverage, right.
So I feel like if they did a better job on the media side and maybe just did some feature cards and, you know, didn't cover every card, it would be a more interesting tournament, especially spectating. Because the thing is, like, if you wanted to watch the tournament, you had to hoof it. You know, you were basically following one card the entire time.
Right.
And there are some really great spots at the Steel Club, if they were to do it there again, to spectate. Like hole one and hole 12 and hole 7 and 9, they're all kind of around the same area. So you could sit on top of the pavilion near the country club
and just and do
drink
a walk
and eat
over
and
here.
Just watch stuff. Yeah, you could just watch everything, including all the drives on one. So I think if they add more people, make it a little deeper, they'd get a better turnout. Because I was actually surprised. They probably had maybe 500 people there, maybe a little more. But I was just surprised that there weren't more people, especially because it's only like an hour and a half from New York City. So right. I thought that there would be a lot more people coming out.
I was surprised that 2 weeks, there was players that turned down the invite, right?
Only Paul.
Was Paul the only one?
Yeah, I think maybe one or two other people. But it was, I think Paul was the big one just because he had another tournament that he already committed to. Because this kind of popped up out of nowhere.
When was he this past weekend?
He had his own tournament called the Battle of Bedford, something like that, maybe? At his course?
Gotcha.
Right here, you're looking at three rounds. You double this, you're looking at...
An extra round?
One extra round. So I'm just trying to... That's 2 days, right? Two rounds each day, 2 days. Could you get it to where it's five straight days, like they would do a world or something?
Well, what I would do is I would just make the first two rounds 9 or 12 holes.
Mm.
The thing is, they had big breaks during lunch too, you know. It was just only Sunday where you played twice, so I feel like they probably could have snuck in more cards, more rounds.
The more things you cram in is the more things you might have to cover in bad weather.
I don't think they had as big a break that I had this past
week. I don't know, I'm just throwing being devil's advocate. And
how long was the break?
No, it's a good point. What happened to you, Kenji?
3 hour break.
Oh good lord.
My god.
Whoa.
3 hour break. 3 hour break.
For a 3 3-hour tour. A 3-hour tour.
So what happened?
I was at States this past weekend, and one course was a par 54. Yeah, so yeah, I literally got done just like a few minutes after 11.
Are we transitioning into New York States now?
No, first I want to complain about the VIP experience that didn't exist.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Just the organization of the event, it was pretty good. Like, it was my first disc golf pro tour event. And so they had a separate parking lot behind the Steel Club, not the main golf lot, because there were still people playing golf and going off on the other 18. So at some points you had actual golfers teeing off at the tee pad parallel and right next to the hole one, which is pretty funny because, you know, these schmucks had like 500 people watching them shank drive, yeah. Shank drives, and everybody was cheering for him. It was hilarious.
Man, if only Brody was there to buy him off.
Oh, God. Fair point. He would have done something. Brody would have had lots of complaints. The only complaint that I had is that if you wanted the VIP experience, which the VIP experience was marketed as you get exclusive access to follow a card of your choice, and you can basically get better access while you're on the field, and there was supposed to be like VIP area for food and drink and all that stuff. And let me tell you, none of that existed. It was just a free-for-all.
At Maple Hill, they do the VIP. You got to have a VIP pass to get into the more tight wooded holes. Like, you can't get out of the whole course.
Got it.
You know, they stop people from going down holes 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Well, that makes sense because they're congested. You can't have everybody
there. Back out by the field, that hole on the wall. You know, you got to have the VIP pass to stay with the group.
I think that they expected there to be more people and they would have had to do it, but there was enough room that it didn't really matter exactly. So, you know, it was a little bit of a bummer. I think I paid $100 for my ticket for the entire weekend and, you know, it was fine. I expected a little bit more out of that because I think you paid 50 or something for the general admission and there was no difference.
Right. Well, the value wasn't there for the VIP experience.
Nope. It was not. But overall, it was a good time. I'll definitely go back.
I have not attended a pro tour event yet.
I will say, though, I don't think the course was like great for match play. It was very Eagle and Calvin friendly, you know?
I haven't watched. I don't know what the holes look like yet.
I mean, they followed ball golf fairways. I mean, there's a couple of cool holes. Like, if you watch the coverage, hole 2 is really neat. It's a tunnel shot to get to a landing zone. Jamin, this is normal hole 3, which was the par 5, which I think you probably played. But what they did is they made it a par 4, and they put the basket right at the edge of the green. So it's a pretty neat hole because you've got to do a placement shot, and then you've got a pretty treacherous second shot that you've got to boom it over this big hill or this downslope to be able to access the basket. And then they combined two holes. So it was like an uphill hole that you had to go under a low ceiling and then up a hill to get to your landing zone. And then you had to kind of go dog leg right and up a hill again. So the best play was like roller roller. And so it was fun to watch like Eagle and Chris Dickerson lay down some like massive rollers and get birdies on the hole, which is pretty cool. But the rest of it was pretty much just slam a big drive or hyzer and just don't screw up your upshot and putt. So a little bit of a bummer there, but it was good for spectating. I just don't know if it was like really testing the best match play golfer. You know what I mean?
What's a good course for that?
I think AGA, which is right down the street, would have been better.
What's AGA?
AGA, the Preserve, is a course that also got set up by Steve Breaux and the Disc Golf Park folks. And it's on a big farm, preserve farmland in Perkasie, Pennsylvania. And it's just an excellent 18-hole course. It's got woods. It's got some nice long par fours that require, you know, placement drives. It's a good course for, I'd say, any level, really, but it definitely challenges the pros.
Nice.
And I think it just would have been better for match play because you got to hit your lines.
What they have for tee pads at Steel Club?
They have turf.
They have turf.
Yeah. they had some temporary tee pad locations. So looks like they just built some turf tee platforms that they could move around. And it seemed like they were just not long enough because a lot of people were stepping off of them and stepping on to get some momentum for their drive.
Gotcha.
But the problem with Steel Club, their turf is just like a little slippery, unlike AGA, which has really grippy stuff. So not all turf is the same.
I don't trust it.
Yeah. I also, and Jamin pointed this out too, I don't know how well it holds up year after year after year, the way that like a concrete tee pad or paver would.
Right.
I would think it definitely needs more maintenance than a concrete tee pad.
It does. Even if it's perfect, Pat, there's aggregate that needs to be added, like swept into the turf.
Right. The sand's got to be added to it like on an annual basis, right?
Right. Mm. That's right.
Just like a golf green.
Maybe more than annual.
Because a tee pad gets more traffic, I would say, even than a busy golf green, because it's spread out over a wider area. Tee pad,
there's a
right
lot
in the middle.
Yeah, friction too.
Yeah.
You know, you got people digging in their shoes.
Well, here's what I discovered when I was researching material for turf tee pads. And that's that the absolute best warranty you can get on commercial field or hitting mats or golf turf, whatever it is, a sports field, you name it. The best warranty you can possibly get is 5 years. And most of them are three and some of them are two. No matter what the quality you buy, the best you can possibly get is a 5-year warranty on the stuff.
Wow, right.
Pavers are going to last 25 years.
Right.
And even then, if like one or two break in that 25 years.
Yeah, you can swap it out.
Yeah.
So the entire paver tee pad could be rendered glossy, you know, after 15, 20 years. So you could conceivably have to swap out every single paver just for traction.
Then you put the grass on top.
Sure. Which is going to get you another 2 to 5 years. If nothing else, that's as far as the manufacturer's willing to go with the best turf you can possibly buy.
Huh.
Turf has a lot of proponents, and I like the feel of turf. I like the argument for turf. I mean, we look at what we wear on our feet, and what we wear on our feet is way better suited for turf than it is for concrete. Yeah, the fact is, if you were going to shoe up properly for everything that you're going to see over the course of a round, you'd wear a tennis shoe or some kind of court shoe, you know, on the tee pads, and you'd wear a hiking shoe for the rest of the round.
Huh.
So I like the idea behind turf. I think it matches the footwear better than a hard surface. But from a logistics standpoint, a maintenance standpoint.
Yeah, we're all volunteer maintenance people.
Especially yeah. In the Northeast, I'm not seeing it.
Speaking of shoes, anybody sign up for the Ideo Kickstarter, the new disc golf shoe?
No, I saw that.
Oh, you know I did.
Sucker!
What's the deal with them?
Oh, it's some random dude that made a purpose-built disc golf shoe, and he got Nate Sexton to buy into it somehow. Probably offered him some equity or something like that. It's just like a hiking shoe that's built for disc golf. It's supposed to be reinforced the right places so you don't blow them out and all that nonsense. So we'll see how it goes. They're waterproof.
Has Nate worn them?
He has, yes. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the non-prototypes look like. Hmm. But they're not cheap. They're like $120, I think, is what I paid on the Kickstarter.
It's about the price of a normal disc golf.
Yeah, it's about what you pay. Yeah. I mean, I'm very happy. I wear the Salomon GTX Ultra 3s, which are kind of like the Terex, but to me, they're a little bit more durable. And I'm pretty content with them. So,
and how long do they last you before you like twisting them out?
You know, what's crazy is that I still haven't, I've got like three pairs in various stages of wear, and I actually haven't really blown one out completely to the point where it's unusable. It's just they get to the point where, you know, my shins start hurting because they don't have the same supportability they when they kind of get worn down.
The cushion's compressed.
Yeah, or get a little bit of a leak underneath the footbed, or, you know, the side of the footbed on the wall, that just like you get too much water in there on a dewy morning round. So that's when they just become my lawn mowing shoes.
Right.
And so they're pretty durable for me, but I just don't think I have that power forehand drag that a lot of people get that ruins their shoes as quickly.
Oh, you're basically, I get mine, I spend like $20 and I drag my foot. And when I see my toe, I spent another $20. I hope that that's like twice a year.
Pat buys all of his disc golf shoes off of Boxcar Hobos.
Almost Walmart or Sam's, you know.
Yeah, I'm just all about the disc golf gear.
That's cool.
I love gear.
Me too, man. Oh, love gear.
I can't spend enough money. I can't spend enough of my wife's money. Hi, honey.
All right. On that note, I'm going to drop off, gentlemen.
All right, man.
Pleasure.
Nice to see you.
Good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Now Kenji can bitch about New York States.
Can't wait to listen to that one in the podcast.
I will not bitch about New York States. I will critique.
Now we can bitch about Ryan.
I will critique New York States.
Yes, I get it.
I understand the undertaking that is putting on an event like that.
If we want New York States to be better, we all have to do a better job.
Yes.
We've hung this thing exclusively on Pat, and we throw him a couple hundred bucks to do it, which I don't even know if Wedge got around to throwing him a couple hundred bucks this year, because I'm just not in that process. But we hang this all on Pat, and then I guess we bitch about it. By no means am I trying to motivate us to make a good New York States. I'm for it. I sure as hell don't have time for it. I don't know who does have time for it.
Yeah, I know. That's what's the tough thing about it.
But New York States is not what we want it to be, because not enough clubs are fully invested in it.
I didn't specifically ask Pat this year, but he reached out to, there's a pretty big list.
Yep.
You know, and we threw him $200. I saw a whole bunch of sponsorship signs. I didn't like read them all, but.
Yeah. I'm just saying that throwing Pat Govang $200 and expecting, you know, New York States to be what we'd like it to be is, it's sort of disingenuous.
Unrealistic.
I have a line of the standard that I think New York State would be, and is why, you know, we haven't jumped on doing it. Last time it was in our area, we said no, and Travis Bashore said, yeah, I'll run it.
Yeah.
One of our locals, but not us, because it was too short a notice, because it deserves more than...
Right. It does, Kenji. I think it deserves a year and a half of planning. You know what I'm saying? Like, the next one is in a year. We should have started 6 months ago.
Yeah. Although this one is 2020s, technically.
Yeah.
So they've had 2 years. Yeah. he's had 2 years.
The Mind Kill New York State Championships. Boom. Problem solved. It's already, don't even do anything different. Just throw a word in there.
I was thinking Gardner.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know who's up next in the lineup. There's like loose talks about regionalizing the rotation that I think got bought in by most of the clubs. Like, it's like us and Adirondacks. It's Wedge and the Downstaters with Long Island.
Long Island, yeah.
And then it's what, the CNY and Disc Ithaca kind of group. And then the Rochester, Buffalo, right. Western, right? Those were the regions.
I think so.
But, so what, it was out Western New York and then Central, I guess, if it's Disc Ithaca running it this year. The year before was out at Brown's Farm, right? So Western did it. I think we're up next. Us or you guys?
Good for you.
No, we're off the hook. I think it's a Wedge in Long Island and Downstate's got to do it, because technically our area did it when Travis did it in 2018.
Stony Kill, right?
Yeah. Yeah, because it was Stony Kill, then Brown's Farms, and now this is the one from last year, which is this Ithaca. But before Stony Kill, it was the Frost Valley one, right?
Yep.
Where's that considered?
No man's land.
Yeah, that's where it all kind of started. I like what Pat and Gary and all them are doing with the Hall of Fame. Me, one other guy from our area went, Ryan Travis, to the Hall of Fame banquet. The food was, it was just a little, it was late.
Yeah.
It's just a long, like, because of the stupid break, the three-hour break. Literally, was a three-hour break.
A three-hour tour.
And a 20-minute drive, 25-minute drive between.
Why was the break 3 hours?
One of the courses got switched out because it was unplayable, especially for 144 people in one day.
Yep.
So the course that it was replaced with was par 54, 5,000 feet.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was a very fun course. It's the type of course that I would love to play with, like, a bunch of beers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that around, like, Warwick Silver to Silver, maybe?
Shorter.
Yeah, way shorter.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 7 down and I lost ground.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shots were good, but it wasn't on par with what I think a New York State's course should be.
No.
There's just markings in the ground, natural tee pads, because they just put it in.
Yeah, yeah, which there's no shortage of good courses. Even near Ithaca, with this. So what course was this that got played?
This is Pat Govang's new property. He literally bought this like this past spring.
Okay.
It's a cool piece of property. It was a horse hospital and rehab center. So there's horse trails, wide horse trails. There's, you know, horse features. There's a, I don't know how to pronounce this right, but a dressage court with whatever the horse dancing thing is called.
Dressage.
Are there graves?
There's no graves and there's corrals and, you know. But yeah, it was a very nice piece of property. All some right. ponds and, but it's just not mature enough yet.
Yep.
That's kind of my thing with the whole New York States. Even TC3. Now, TC3 has been around like 15, 20 years.
Forever. Yeah, yeah.
But they went through a dramatic redesign. So there's so much blazed out, new cut, real rough ground. Branches aren't quite trimmed up yet kind of areas.
Yeah, I can give a total pass to the short course because of just the time frame in which it was instated. But the short course, in my opinion, was the more ready one than TC3. I mean, there were two holes on TC3 that we took an hour and a half on last day.
That was with me spotting for you guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally took an hour and a half to play two holes.
Yeah, the brush on those two holes was Matt Miller had to lay down under a bush for one of them to get 20 feet closer to the basket. And only 5 of those feet was actually out of the bush.
Who was the other guy in your card? What, the Massachusetts player? What was his name?
Oh, Nick Walker. He's actually from Buffalo. He just
lives he's from Buffalo. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought he was Massachusetts. But
he lives there now.
I saw exactly where his disc went, but it took him like 10, 15 minutes to blaze his way in there to get his disc to be able to throw from it.
It was horrendous. Ben Basilio tried to throw an upshot out of that same area the day before, and his disc probably flew 50 feet in front of him, and we had to declare it lost.
Who was our champion?
Nathan Marizio.
I feel for Pat in the I don't know, he's probably getting a lot of heat for this event. He was saying, you know, if I ever want to run states again, kick me in my ass.
Yeah, I'm afraid you might as well get your ass-kicking boots on, because he's a glutton for punishment.
Yeah. Yeah. And his property is going to be, I think, he only used about 20 acres out of the 60, he was telling me. Give it 3-4 years after he's developed it and done what he wants with it. It's going to be great. And okay, I can agree with Jamin that they're literally working on Danby the week before, still planning on using it, but just the rain just made it not possible.
Yeah.
How'd you guys do?
I missed the cut by one stroke, and I had a damn putt that went center. I went down to pick up my mini, and I heard my group groan because it fell out the back.
Oh, that's the worst.
Yeah.
Jamin, you obviously made the cuts because he was spotting for you guys.
Yeah. So I tied for last in the cut, and then I was able to jump up to third place on the last day.
Trophy.
Oh, wow.
Pretty solid round. Yeah, day one at TC3, I was way too fixated on really not liking the tee pads. And then I just ignored it on day two and was able to shoot way better from some longer tee pads.
I didn't think the tee pads were that bad. The tee pads that I played off of, they looked a little lumpy here and there, but I really didn't feel any issue or I didn't slip. Only complaint I had about tee pads is a couple of them that were raised where you kind of stepped off weird after you threw.
Yeah, for me, I've built a lot of tee pads this year, and none of the tee pads that we played off of had been tamped at all.
Yeah, yeah, they didn't seem like they are stretched or tamped yet.
Yeah, none of the AstroTurf was screwed into the frame.
I have yet to see what I think is properly installed turf tee pads. I've played on turf in a couple courses, but I've always played where they're just not what I think a proper install on a turf tee pad should look like.
AGA Farms has really great turf tee pads.
Now, to do turf right, aren't you supposed to like double frame it and like pinch the turf in between the inside and outside frame and then mound the middle a little bit, right? With like some sort of proper compacted fill.
Yep.
With slightly crested.
Yep. So, I mean, it's like anything else, Kenji. Like a bunch of hacks putting in pavers.
Oh, yeah. I've spent a lot of work days with Greg Kurtz with him yelling at me, it's good enough. I'm like, no.
No.
I'm going to do it right. I don't care if it takes me an extra hour.
Yeah.
And I don't think everybody has that same work ethic.
Agreed. Or knowledge.
Or knowledge, right. Yeah. I have got the knowledge, you know. We need it. And we're all volunteer laborers.
The very simple knowledge that your surface will ultimately take the form of your substrate is all that's really needed to do a proper prep job on the substrate, to properly tamp your fill, all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm. You got to throw down to get a plate compactor in the area, Jamie.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I would love that.
Or 4 or 5 tampers so that it's not like 6 assholes standing around while one guy wears himself out tamping.
We usually bring one tamper and we go, you know, people do rounds.
Yeah.
Go up, back the whole T-pad. Next person goes up, back the whole T-pad.
Your surface will take the shape of the substrate.
Yeah.
Right, Pat?
My mind is blown. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Your mind will take the shape of the substrate.
Jason, did you play New York State Championships?
No, I dropped a few weeks ago with the Pirate event coming up next weekend and long list of stuff to do. We dropped out and sounds like it was the right decision. We were kind of getting a vibe that, you know, it was a lot of effort to try to find babysitters and a multi-day tournament. So probably not worth it for us. And sounds like we spent the whole weekend at Jay Park pretty much, and I'm exhausted, but we got a lot done. It was well worth, nice. Worth the drop.
It wasn't as bad. You know, we're complaining. I had a good time.
Right.
I played decent. I had fun both my rounds. I thought the Hall of Fame banquet, the food was good. It was a little late. Like I said, it was scheduled from like 7 to 11. And at 7 o'clock, you know, everybody's hanging out at the bar. They didn't do food until like 8 o'clock, which I thought was just a little late, but kind of understandable with whatever else is going on. Inductees and the induction thing was very cool. Brinster wasn't able to make it, but he sent in like a video and thanked him. That was very nice. I never met Paul Stevens, and I heard about all what he's done out in the Buffalo area. He's a guy that's put all those courses in all the state parks out in that Buffalo area. I think they listed off like 30.
Wow.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Super nice guy. Bobby Jones, you know, he's a super personality. Mm-hmm. It was nice to see him inducted. I enjoy that whole, the Hall of Fame and, you know, recognizing who's come before us.
Yeah,
absolutely. I wish it was a little more well attended, you know, like out of everybody that came out, me and Ryan Travis were the only disc cappers there. It was also like, when was that? Frost Valley was all, you know, together right there. It was a little more party vibe.
Everyone
was on the same property. I think it's better like that. You got to find that location that keeps everybody together.
Yep.
Make people, you know, give them lodging, cheap, decent lodging options right on property. I think that vibe is much better.
And that's why Wedge can't do it.
They left the FDR.
Christ the King.
That's what Jamin said. That's what Jamin said. I said that is like a perfect venue. Oh. Keep everybody on site all weekend. You know, have other activities going on.
Oh, I was going from the affordable lodging standpoint.
Affordable lodging is great. You know, camping option would be awesome. Mm.
That's kind of why I wanted to go out this year. Leading up to the event, there was a lot of things that made a lot of people worried, but the reason I stuck it out is because I wanted to see how New York State's works and all that kind of stuff. The only one that I had gone to previously was Stony Kill, which didn't feel much like a state's to me.
No, that was very quickly put together.
Yeah.
So I was happy to go see. I think Pat does a great job organizationally with stuff. I think he just was dealt a pretty bad hand on the course front with just everything that.
I know there's a whole bunch of politics that's been going on with the college too.
Yeah.
You know, there's been union issues where there has been stop work orders where they couldn't do nothing.
Yeah. I like to complain about stuff, but I'm not complaining about Pat in any capacity.
You got no, nobody has grounds to complain about Pat.
Yeah. We're all organizers. We know what it's like behind the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a lot of work.
He did an amazing job at Frost Valley, too. That tournament was amazing.
Yeah. That was super fun time there. I had a lot
of fun. It's in my top events ever. In the back of my mind.
Nice.
Staying in a castle.
Yeah, something that's what I think states should be each year. We got to find those locations that it can go around to.
I think the other thing we have to find is a payoff. You know, there's got to be something, and there used to be, right? There was an automatic invite to
USDGC?
Was it USDGC? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It used to be grant the pick to USDGC that the PDGA rep got.
Right, right, right.
And that's not there anymore.
No, if you could bring something like that back into it, you know, give people a reason to go.
Yeah, well, I don't know. What's the big event you could buy them into? Buy them into Worlds or something? You got
to
qualify.
Yeah, and I think there need to be more reasons to go. So for that Frost Valley event, I know Pat was, you know, working hard to have value in the event. He was working hard to make the trophies for the event unique and special. And, you know, I think it needs that and plus, plus, plus.
Yeah, and that takes fundraising that nobody in the state really wants to do. I'm happy. Oh, you only want $200 each year? Yep, here you go.
So if that's all we're willing to do.
Yeah, I agree with you. It takes more of a group effort to make it what we think it should be.
Or more money.
Yeah.
If all the clubs were sending Pat $2,000, Pat might be able to put something different together.
Right. I don't think many of the clubs could afford $2,000.
Well, so what if we threw a $2, $3 per player fee into every event we ran?
Yeah, something like that, right.
That went to state.
Tell Newman to say yes to any event he wants a dollar a player.
Yeah, I think there's painless ways to add a lot of cash to that event.
But then you also got to get all the clubs to agree on something in the whole state. That might be a lift too.
Maybe. Maybe all the clubs don't have to agree to the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, if you say that, hey, club, if you can raise $1,000, then blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And then they can figure it out their own way. If they want to, you know, discap, if they wanted to raise $1,000, they could just charge a dollar per person for every tournament kind of thing.
Right.
That would
be covered pretty quickly.
Six events
each
a year.
Club about can do whatever they want.
You know, the less than 100 piece.
You could award the club something like pick the players any way you like at this level, you bring in $1,000.
Yeah, if it was a little more exclusive, like it earned you invites.
Right, like exactly.
It's got to get to that wanted level first.
Right, yeah.
That's you know, it's not purpose. There yet. You didn't
you
sell out.
Want to go.
You could have signed up the night before, right? Or whatever the day registration ended, Wednesday or whatever.
And believe me, I'm not volunteering. I'm just trying to spit out.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And that's probably the whole issue.
And that's the problem.
What it is.
I think there are painless ways that clubs across the state could add value to it and at the same time add awareness to it.
I don't know if there's that buy-in to it across the state.
Well, there isn't now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Like I said, probably more than one thing. It needs to be brought to bear on the event for it to start to matter.
You got to come down with like five good locations that are, it can rotate around and be in different regions of the state that are destination kind of spots, you know, all in one or very close by.
The default complaint about it is, oh, it's so big, the regions are so far from each other. There are like 10 other states that have big state championships, all of which are significantly larger geographically.
Right. Isn't Texas a silver series?
Yeah. Yep. Anywho, New York State.
I had a good time at States. It was a fun weekend away. I was in the whole area from Thursday to Sunday. It was great.
I'm glad it happens.
Yeah.
Me too.
And I'm glad that Pat's been shepherding it. I do also dig the Hall of Fame stuff. I think that's great shit.
Yeah, it was nice to, you know, there's a lot of names, you know, the Hall of Famer. Newman was there.
Yep.
Doug Opiella, Mary Opiella, Royce Ranowski, some of the real old timers there.
Sure.
So is it pretty much just Pat Govang that's coordinating and orchestrating the states?
So far.
Yeah, okay. Him and Gary Crowley kind of came up with the Hall of Fame idea going along with states, you know, and doing the inductee. You know, he asks the clubs for nominations every year, and then the Hall of Fame members vote.
So it was bigger. I think you credit Pat with reviving it.
We used to bounce around. When we did it in 2011, it awarded the USDGC invite.
Yep.
The USDGC doesn't operate like that anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Each PDGA rep was able to go and then send in somebody else from the state, right?
Right. So my understanding is it had a heyday where it was moving around the state, and then it basically receded into Rochester for a number of years. And my consciousness of it is that maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, Pat started to float it farther and wider again, trying to get more clubs involved.
Gotcha. Yeah, I like that it exists. it's great that we have a state championship and hopefully continues to grow more support. And I like the fact that it goes from region to region.
And, you know, I never had a conversation with Tripp when he was PDG rep, how he kind of ran it. Like, I'm missing that story a little bit, what happened with it. I know he used to reach out to us for money every year.
Yeah. So I don't know if Pat got a hold of Wedge, and I don't know if he got any money out of them. I'm not in it. And so Pat can reach out to me for all the money he wants, and I'm not giving him any.
No, I thought it was value. I got a really nice players pack.
Yeah, good.
We got a cool like drawstring bag. I got a disc, a hat, a sticker, a grip six belt with, you know, the Statue of Liberty face holding the basket.
Oh yeah, that's cool. But also, it sounds like it would have been pretty damn good if Danby had been good to play.
Yeah, I just was missing the vibe of being together. Like, yeah. I felt like people were just with the whole tee times and the big separation in the timing of the courses. There wasn't the hang
right
community yep. vibe, you know?
Yep.
Couldn't that be attributed to COVID?
I was just going to say.
A little, yes, definitely.
Yeah, but I think that the only opportunity for everybody, because we were on two different courses, to congregate in the middle was a ticketed event that you'd had to pay for.
Oh, I see.
And lunch was included. That was nice. Got sandwich and chips and soda and cookies and shit. Hall of Fame banquet was a separate. I don't even know how much I paid for dinner.
How would it have worked with this other course? It still would have been tee times and everything, right? That didn't change, or did it?
Yeah, how the event happened didn't change because of the course change.
It was just the location.
It was just a location. Yeah, it was two shotgun starts, mm-hmm. but just the difference in, you know, a 2 hour tournament round to a 4 hour tournament round.
Mm.
Yeah, I was on the good side of that. So I finished my round, went, stopped at the place for lunch really quick, and then went to my course and had pretty expedient time. But that's because I played the 4 hour round first.
Mm, I gotcha.
Yeah, because like we got Tucker Hill at 8 o'clock in the morning, 10 of 8 in the morning, warmed up, said hello to people. We teed off at 9. I was done playing at like 5 after 11. I think I left there at like 11:45 after, you know, bullshitting with some people and buying a couple of stuff at the shop to try and support a little bit. Went and had lunch, hung out there for a bit, bought nice coffee at Dunkin' Donuts, kind of getting my way to the course, and then hung out for like an hour before the freaking round started.
Are you recording all this, Pat? Wow.
We teed off at like 2 o'clock, and I got finished like 5:45. And had to kill an hour until 7 o'clock where the whole, you know, Hall of Fame thing was supposed to start when it was literally 2 miles down the road. And then the dinner thing, you know, then there was like everybody was hanging out in the bar for like an hour before the Hall of Fame thing even started. So it didn't even start until like 8 o'clock. Now, the food was great, but yeah, it made just for a long day.
No, I get you. I assume, though, that means, Jamin, you had some time to kill at the end of your day.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you had all that time like that, if everybody was at one spot, it'd be cool. But when, you know, I was kind of sitting in my truck by myself the whole fucking time.
Yeah. You two just exemplified two sides of high school in the same day.
Yeah. It's cool to be a pro.
Yeah. Yeah, we finished up our round. Like,
I'm just a slow.
Matt Miller fished my putter out of the pond. Then we went and got a beer.
Nice.
Somebody get Kenji out of that locker. So Artemis Unchained is happening this Sunday, the 26th. I know there's still room. It's all women's event. If you are a lady or know a lady, it'd be a great first event. Naomi is playing in the event because Andy promised her she could play in just one single round. So there's a purple division, women who are just playing one single round. I know there's room. It's a great event. You can find it on Disc Golf Scene, Artemis Unchained. And then I'd also like to plug Bill Newman's event in October, Bro Pink, which is breast cancer-related charities doubles event. You can enter it as women's pairs or a mixed pair. Chris Giardini, who's one of the new movers and shakers at Wedge, is helping him out. And every single dollar is going straight to breast cancer-related charities in Westchester. That's Saturday, October 16th. So a lot of good work going into those events, and they're going to be fun. And find them both on Disc Golf Scene and get registered.
Nice.
Awesome. All right. Well,
if our event's already sold out, we're good.
Yeah, nice. Thank you, Jack, Jason, Jamin, Kenji, and Ryan.
We're not changing. We got Pat's
Valley. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.